Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. A domestic violence shelter in Fairbanks stands to lose $500,000 due to federal program cuts. KUAC's Robin reports.
A federal program called the Crime Victims Fund has been dwindling and will give a lot less money to domestic violence agencies in each of the states. Alaska is expecting a dramatic $6 million less than last year.
There's really no way we can shrink 30% and continue to do what we do.
That's Brenda Stanfield, the director of the Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living. This is not taxpayer money. It comes from criminals paying fees, fines, and forfeitures.
When people have these white-collar crimes where they're like, okay, just pay this penalty, this money goes into this fund, and then this fund is used to help individuals who are victims of crime.
Deposits in the Crime Victims Fund fluctuate every year based on the cases that the Department of Justice successfully prosecutes. But during the last federal administration, the DOJ has used more of what's called deferred prosecutions and non-prosecution agreements, where cases are settled and monetary penalties go to the General Treasury rather than the Crime Victims Fund. And that has meant some historically lean years for the fund. The deposits in the last 4 years have not been that low since 2003. The federal money is doled out to the states by population. It comes through Alaska's Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. In a letter sent April 1st, Council Executive Director Diane Casto wrote that Victims of Crime Act funding would decrease by nearly 35% from the previous year. Stanfield says she will probably lay off 6 full-time equivalent jobs.
If we cut services, women and children will die. Individuals who are being victimized by domestic violence or sexual assault will die.
There is a bill in Congress to change the Victims of Crime Act. It's called the VOCA Fix. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski signed on to sponsor it as Senate Bill 611 in March. The bill would capture back that money from deferred prosecutions and non-prosecution agreements, but the accounting would not stabilize enough for the Crime Victims Fund to grow for about 2 years. In the meantime, shelters across the state are hoping the Alaska legislature will put some American Rescue Plan money toward relieving domestic violence.
So we're going to have 2 years to get through. The rescue funds can be stretched through that time frame. If our state designates those rescue funds to be used to fill this gap until we can get the VOCA fix in, then we won't have to make those really hard decisions.
More than $1 billion from the rescue plan was given to Alaska for the category State Fiscal Recovery. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
There was a hearing yesterday in the Fairbanks 4 federal civil rights case against the city of Fairbanks. The Native men known as the Fairbanks Four, George Fries, Marvin Roberts, Kevin Peace, and Eugene Vent, were convicted and imprisoned for the 1997 beating death of 15-year-old John Hartman on a city street. But evidence presented during a 2015 hearing pointed to another group of local young men actually being responsible for the crime. The new evidence led to a settlement agreement, now at issue as the Fairbanks Four sue the city for civil rights violations. Wednesday's hearing was on a request by the city that the case be bifurcated, or considered in two stages, starting with a ruling on whether the 2015 settlement and prison release agreement banning the Fairbanks Four from suing the city or state is valid.
I believe we need targeted discovery about the circumstances of the 2015 settlement agreement.
City Attorney Matt Singer told U.S. District Court Judge Sharon Gleason that the Fairbanks Four had an expert legal team that helped craft the settlement agreement they signed.
And then there's a separate page, the attorneys each signed and attested that they fully explained the agreement and its consequences to their clients, and that they believed their clients understood the terms.
Singer said the validity of the settlement agreement hinges on facts that should be considered separately and prior to alleged civil rights offenses, including coercion of false confessions and fabrication of evidence by city police. But Fairbanks 4 attorney Anna Benvenuti Hoffman maintains that the two issues are intertwined.
All the misconduct that led to our clients being in prison is all relevant, and it'd be more efficient to just take all discovery and then proceed with the case.
Benvenuti Hoffman says the fact that 3 of the Fairbanks 4 were still in prison and would have remained there until another trial proved their innocence weighed heavy on their decision to sign the settlement agreement.
You can't separate out that they're actually innocent and that they're facing continued incarceration.
Judge Gleason said she expected to rule on the request to separate the two questions soon, noting the longevity of the case. Work is set to begin next month on improvements to Fort Wainwright's main gate. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Motorists may run into delays as they approach the main gate while the $2.5 million project is underway and at the visitor's center for those who must stop there to get a visitor's pass.
We anticipate the wait for a pass just to be about 2 to 3 minutes longer than normal.
Fort Wainwright spokesperson Eve Baker says when work is completed this fall, there'll be more lighting around the visitor center parking lot, and motorists will be able to get onto Post more easily because the project includes adding a designated lane for commercial vehicles like delivery trucks.
They won't have to move over, you know, to get around the trucks. And so that'll provide safety for the occupants of all the cars and for the workforce.
The project contractor will also take care of more routine maintenance that Alaska's roads require this time of year.
Fill the potholes and improve the road surface in general, and that will make everyone a lot happier.
Baker says Post officials will adjust the timing of traffic signals around the construction zone as needed to keep traffic moving, and they'll do the same with signals around other gates that motorists may use to avoid the construction, like the Trainer Gate. She says they'll also temporarily reopen the nearby Lazelle Gate to weekday inbound traffic and the Richardson South Gate off the Richardson Highway for weekday outbound traffic. Baker says the project is designed to enable motorists to get around a much larger construction zone that'll be set up nearby next year. That's when the State Department of Transportation will begin reconstructing the Airport Way intersection with the Steese and Richardson highways. DOT engineer Carl Heim says that $15 million project will take 2 years to complete.
So we'll have a full construction season, you know, April through October, and then the following year, April through October.
Heim says the Transportation Department will host an April 27th open house in Fairbanks to talk more about the project. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
The state announced 196 new Alaska resident COVID-19 cases yesterday. The new cases confirmed Tuesday included 60 in Anchorage, 51 in Wasilla, 16 in Palmer, and 12 in Fairbanks. Elsewhere in the interior, North Pole had 10 new cases, Delta Junction 2, and the Denali Borough 1. The Department of Health and Social Services also listed 5 new non-resident cases, including one in Fairbanks and a mining industry case in the Southeast Fairbanks census area. The DHSS reported 3 new COVID-19 hospitalizations, with 44 diagnosed and 3 suspected virus patients hospitalized statewide. 6 patients were on ventilators. And Dan Bross.